Now you say you have pure. It's all superstition. So Rabbi Yechanan says to the man, there was an illness that they called Ruach Tzozis, which the name means an evil spirit. At that time, they were thinking that somebody's an evil spirit went into a person. So he asked him, have you ever had that kind of an illness? He says, no. Have you seen somebody have you? Oh, yes. He says, what we do? He says, we bring grass, we burn the grass, we let the man inhale the smoke, and the spirit haunts him. So Rabbi Yechanan said the same thing, he says. You touch a dead corpse, an evil spirit walks into you. And you get rid of it. Yes.
The reason I come to this class,
I confess I'm guilty, but that's me. So, so Rabbi Yechanan said, we are doing the same thing. He's touching the dead body, he says, the dead spirit comes into him, he says, and that dead spirit smells the ashes and runs away. To go left. And then, the Talmudim, the students of Rabbi Yechanan said, Rabbi, you push that fellow away with the storm. Tell us the truth. What's the meaning pushing away with the storm? If I am holding a pipe like this, and somebody wants to come close to can't. If it's instead of a pipe, it's a straw. If he tries, the straw bends. If he doesn't try, so he goes away. He said, you gave him an answer which he would have tried to examine it, it would bend. What did you tell us? So Rabbi Yechanan says, I swear the dead corpse does not make tummy. The water of the Torah Duman does not make tummy. We are ordered by the Creator to do it like this, we can't ask questions. That's what the answer. Now, why did they say that the answer was not an answer? Very simple. He told them, you are superstitious. So he said, no, we are not superstitious, but we smoke out the spirit. That's also superstition. He didn't answer. So how come that man accept the answer? Why did he accept the answer? The explanation is, that people accept things not only because they understand them. They accept things because they are used to them, they are accustomed to them, or they accept things because people have accepted them, and if everybody believes it, he believes it too. There are many substitutes for logic. There are many substitutes. So that man is a simple man, and he thinks he has to understand everything, which by itself shows a low intelligence. Because the more intelligent we are, the more we find out that we don't know yet. You know, today, if somebody needs an office machine, I wouldn't advise them to buy it. I would advise them to rent it, to lease it. Why? Because that machine, 3 months from now, will be obsolete. There will be a new machine. Which means there is no end to what we don't know and to what we discover. One discovery after another. Discovery means we are lucky we found something we didn't know. But there are more discoveries. So, somebody has to be an idiot to think that he knows everything. There's no such thing. The creation is endless, it's bottomless. But on the other hand, he couldn't answer that man, that we can't understand it. The man wouldn't take it. So what does it tell him? Tell him, he says, that's something that you accept. Interesting. The student says, Rabbi, what did you say? It's also mistaken. What did you say? He said, I couldn't answer it. But the truth is, he says, we don't understand it. But this is when we are talking about tumor. That's the last thing we can understand, the entire concept. Then, Minhatuva. There is no tumor which is limited to one part of the body. Either the entire person is stomach, or the entire person is not. Kinder Chachomim said, hands you cannot watch. You can. The same, there are two things which you cannot watch. One thing is your tongue, because speech is a very fast action, and before you had a time to think what you are saying, you said it already. Very hard to watch your tongue. You know Rabbi Pliskin? You know Pliskin? The one who wrote Gateway to Happiness? Huh? His first book was Guard Your Tongue. Terrible book. That's the kind of a book that you can't keep open, both your mouth and the book. If one is open, the other one has to be closed. But the fastest machine is the tongue. Next come the hands. Hands are touching constantly. Doing something constantly. And it's very hard to control it. So came, it's a rabbinical, how do you say it, Takana? Induction. That at certain times, your hand have to be washed. Before a meal of bread, you have to wash your hands. And they say the hands are unclean. The entire body is clean, the hands are unclean. The
the morning they said the same. One of the reasons could be just because in sleep a person can definitely not watch his hands, and they are touching all over. This is a practical reason. Especially in the morning, you wash your hands and you make a bracha on the tefillah shadayim. Why? Because the first thing you do is to dab. It is a respectful way. It would be a disrespectful way. We dab, we are communicating with the Creator Himself. It would be a very disrespectful way if I would not watch my cleanliness at that time, prepare myself. As a matter of fact, when it's normal that when a person starts Menesha, he buttons himself up. He's facing the Creator, he wants to be dressed neatly. And that's all about the hands too. And that's why we make a bracha. We don't make a bracha because of the spirit. We make a bracha because we prepare ourselves for davening. There is something about the spirit, the same as there is something, but we don't know it. At least I cannot. I take it as for things which I don't understand, and I take it.
The definition
of what?
Of Tuma and Tahara. One doesn't know what either one means. Or you're saying we do know what it means, but we don't understand it.
No, let me tell you. There are things which I don't know, and still I may have some understanding. But in Tuma and Tahara, I don't know. The things which I say I can have some understanding, I'll tell you. The Rambam says that realities are non-tangible. He says the tangible is not real. I don't know how. Does it make sense to you or not? Yeah. And take a simple thing, like a human being. It's not such a simple machine, the human being. It's a human being. The life is not tangible. And without the life, it's a corpse. The intelligence, the capacity of thinking is a non-tangible. And without this, there is no value to the corpse. Is that right? So, in the human being himself, the reality is a non-tangible. And if you take that piece of paper, the reality is the energy in the atoms, which is non-tangible. Huh? Is it clear what I say?
I understand a little.
Huh?
I understand a little.
If you learn physics, you'll find out that the real reality are things which we know they exist, we handle them, we have learned how to handle them, but we don't know them. As a matter of fact, we talk to each other. Do I see you? I see your nose. I don't see you. Your personality, I don't see. You don't see me. We have an opinion about each other. Not because we know, by conclusion. By experience, we have experience with each other. And that experience tells us something about each other. But that's all. The reality is an intangible. Any objection to what I said? What is it? Huh?
You told that you can determine the wise sages can determine the personality of a person by looking at his external being, looking at his face, or looking, I don't know, that yeah. Point not looking at what, but by looking at his external being, to determine what he was internally.
First, it's not certain. It may be misleading. But then what it is just a conclusion that your computer makes. We are full of computers. What we call the intuition, that's a computer. Why are you laughing?
Huh? It makes sense.
It makes sense.
Yeah. Just like a computer.
Yeah, now just like a computer. The computer is, it keeps a secret for you. You know that? Take a little calculator. Ask him, how is 17 times 13 and a half? You push a key and it closes. He doesn't tell you how he reached it. He gives you just a result. He doesn't tell you how he came to the result, right?
Right.
Huh?
Right.
That's what the computer does for you. The computer gives you the last line, but it doesn't tell you how it did. Huh? And that with our intuition also. Scholarship is the capacity of tracing back our own computer and find out how the computer functions. That's the scholarship. Because in many, many things we know, and we don't know how we know it. Let me give you an illustration. What is a way or a road? You have a way from here to the bus station. You have a way of life. You have a way of solving problems. Is there a common idea between all that? What's common between my way from here to the bus station and my way to solve a problem?
It's the abstraction of being a starting point and an end point.
Right. Right. Did you think of it before? Huh? But you use the word correctly in all cases. Means that your machine, yes, knew about it. Huh? And all you're thinking is to trace back your computer and find out how did it reach it. And then you are coming to a formula. But it seems that we are much smarter than we know. So, but still we are dealing with an intangible. Even that explanation becomes compared. You gave me a definition now, right? The definition compared with the way itself is an abstract to a concrete. The way from here to this matter is a concrete. The idea is an abstraction, the distance between two points. It's again the same. The reality is in the non-tangible. And the non-tangible, I can handle. I don't know it, but I can handle it. The same as you can handle electricity. We still don't know what electricity is. But it's a kind of an energy that we learned how to do. How to handle it, how to harness it. And take a psychologist. Learn how to handle people. You don't know. And take a medicine every man. He learned how to make you buy what he wants to sell you. Same thing. Now there's an entire world of non-tangible. And I don't know. Maybe Tuma Vithara is from that world. But for us, we don't know it, but we are told how to behave. Yes. Did I answer now? Next. Meat. Is not a 100% healthy food. It has side effects. Somebody in perfect health, he has no problems. Somebody is sound, health is not so good, right away you tell him, stay away from red meat. And better live on vegetables, something like that. This is a characteristic of things which are not exactly designed by nature for this. Whatever is designed by nature, it says, "Birchas Hashem itas ve'lo yisoseh etz avinu." A blessing of the Creator brings you blessings and doesn't give you any trouble. Nourishment. I find that fruit and vegetables have very little side effects, if any. Not only this. What's a dessert? A dessert is to chase away aftertaste. Huh? The aftertaste of what? Of meat, of fish? There is only one vegetable that I know has an aftertaste and I can't explain, I don't know why. That's onions. I can't figure this out. For meat, I can't figure out why. Meat was permitted to Noah. Before Noah, before the flood, there was no such a thing like they can do. Now when I am thinking, what is the, what does eating meat represent? Eating meat represents somebody building his existence upon the destruction of another existence. Building his life upon the destruction of life. To say, to be exact, maybe I destroy a plant too. But we are more sensitive to life than to plants. So how come that it was forbidden to Adam, was forbidden for 10 generations, and then Noah was permitted? I can tell you what my thinking, I can't guarantee, but I can tell you my thinking. We have almost every institution, I don't know, here in America's world, but in America, every institution, a school, for example, a hospital, every institution which is housing, which is housing people, hotel, have to have emergency generators. You know that? Huh? In case of the current, something will happen in the current, you have your emergency generator. Have you been to the subway in New York? The subway in New York, very, very frequently, they were short. And the light is out. And as soon as the light is out, some small bulbs are going down. That's an emergency system. But it seems to me that the emergency system goes on batteries. And they have a relay. You know what it is? I'll tell you what. Let's say, here is the battery, and in order to be connected, there has to be something to connect. Here is a spring who pushes this to the battery, and here is a magnet which throws it away. That magnet is magnetized by the current. So therefore, as long as the current is on, those batteries are disconnected. As soon as something happens to the current, the magnet is not activated anymore. The spring pushes it and you have it. That's what the relay is. Is it clear? What's the function of it? The function of it is that people should not remain in total darkness. The battery cannot give an ideal light, but at least it keeps you out of darkness. Now, it seems that what the engineers figured out in electricity, the creator has figured out before. The entire universe is full of such relays. If you talk to a doctor, I'll tell you how it works in case when a person is in a case of an illness and the normal system doesn't function right. There's right away an emergency system which keeps the body existing over the crisis. You've talked to a medical man, I'll tell you. It's full. The human body is full of relays like this. And the entire system of the universe is is called like this. That if something goes wrong, right away there is the next system, an emergency system that goes in. And those systems may be an endless chain of systems in the universe. That's one thing. The second thing is that human behavior has an influence of an entire universe. Today, we very easily can imagine it because we have so many remote controls. You push a button in your car and you open your garage door, right? Huh? So we have learned already that there are remote influences. And the theory tells us that the human being, that his behavior has an influence all over the universe. Now, it says that the marvel before the flood, one of the things that the Chumash tells us about it, Kimolo Ha'oretz Chomesh, the earth was filled up with rabbi. What's rabbi? One man wants to build up his strength upon taking away from somebody else, right? Huh? So this has degraded nature. A degraded nature that from there on we're living already in an emergency system. And that emergency system is that we need for our sustenance, we need already to live on the destruction of other life. And that's why it was permitted. It doesn't mean that a person would die if he's a vegetarian. But it may mean that after 50 generations, fulfill it. It was permitted. Now, if somebody who lives on the theory of evolution has no reason whatsoever to eat meat. Somebody who lives on the theory of evolution, it's another question. Where does he take his ethics from? And as a matter of fact, today, the ethics of the non-believer in creation is breaking down anyway. And the society is breaking down. But for me, I have no problem. For me, I live the way the Creator told me. And what He permits me, I can do it. And what He cannot permit me, I cannot do it. And in Chumash it's mentioned that if you kill an animal when you are not permitted, it's accounted like bloodshed. I'll tell you where it is in Chumash. In Leviticus, in Vayikra, chapter 17, verse 4. The man has slaughtered when he was not supposed to slaughter. Dam yechoshev le'ishav. Blood will be accounted for that man, dum shot of his blood. For killing an animal. The entire concept seems to be strange, right? It's killing an animal of bloodshed, it's killing an animal of murder. You know why? I'll tell you. Because if you take human thinking, not theory thinking, not religious thinking, human thinking. There is no reason why I shouldn't murder. I have no reason. If it's convenient for me, that's what they are doing today. The only reason that people say don't murder, and the court thinks, if I would say you can murder, I may become the victim too. So therefore I settle that I shouldn't murder in order you shouldn't murder. I understand. So it's a reciprocity. The entire human ethics, the non-religious ethics, is based on reciprocity. It's selfishness, nothing else. Therefore, I say, if I say you can kill an animal, it doesn't hurt me, I'm not an animal. This is why I can go hunting. This explains the average thinking. Killing an animal is not murder because it doesn't bother me. It wouldn't boomerang on me. Killing a man? Came the Nazis and said, killing a Jew would not boomerang on a German. Therefore, there was no murder committed, no crime committed, killing a Jew. Same thing. Is it clear what I said? Where does ethics really come in? Tell you where it comes in. You have a machine. Any part of that machinery is important for the entire machine. Because if one part would not function, the machine would stop, right? Now, if that machine is the universe, and somebody created the universe, and somebody created me, what's my importance? I'm one screw in that machine. This is my God. To the Creator. I'm a screw in the machine, in his machine I'm a screw. But you are a screw in the same machine. Which makes a sequel. Which is the same as I'm responsible to the Creator for my life, I'm responsible to the Creator for your life. Is that clear what I said? Is it clear? It says, the Gemara tells a story about the man who came to Hillel. A pagan comes to Hillel and said, teach me the entire Torah while I'm standing on one leg. You know? Says, what you don't like for yourself, he says, don't do it to anybody else. He says, that's the Torah. The rest go and study. He's a canon. But on the surface, somebody would say, this is not religion, it's human, right? It is. Because if you don't have the foundation that you're responsible to a creator, you are the center of the existence yourself. You don't care for anybody else. You care for somebody else only as much as it may reflect on you. Not more. Is it clear? So therefore, logically, life is life. There's no difference whether it's my life or an animal life. From an egoistic point, a selfish point, Everybody's. By saying that you can kill animals, God says you can kill humans. I mean, that's different. But logically, there is no difference. And the Tera says there is no difference. But the only difference is what the Rabbi Islam, the Creator, permitted you, you can do it. If he didn't permit you, you cannot do it. So, and let me tell you myself. Sometimes I have feelings in it, especially poultry. Poultry, if you see the, you see the pattern, yeah? You have feelings. And I think if I would not have been used since I was a child, I wouldn't be able to eat. But if I'm thinking logically, why the Creator permitted me, I permitted. But that's it. And on the other hand, somebody say, I can be, I'll be outstanding, I'll be, I'll go over the line of my duty. It's a question who I am. There's a story in Gemara, very interesting. Yeah, it's so unusual in our time. A man goes, and he wears black shoes. Tesla says black shoelaces. And black shoelaces were a symbol for mourners. And a man goes in the street and he wears black shoelaces. And the police gets him and says, why black shoelaces? Police of the exilarch. You have heard of the exilarch. That this was in Babylon at the time of the Talmud. The Jews in Babylonia had full autonomy. They had their own governor, a Jew, and they had their own police. So the Jewish police meets that man in the street. He goes black shoulder and this time, why are you black shoulder? He says, I am displaying how I mourn for Jerusalem. Jerusalem is horrible, destroyed, and I'm mourning. He said, are you such a great man that you mourn in Jerusalem? So they took it for arrogance. They put him in jail. He says, let me go, I am a great scholar. And a great scholar, it would fit. They say, how do you know? He says, either you ask me a question of the law, or I'll ask you a question of the law. So he said, you ask. So he says, if somebody has destroyed unripe dates before they were ripe, how much will he pay? So you say, you should pay how much the unripe dates are in the market. He says, why? He says, that man, if he wouldn't destroy it, the man the next day would have good dates. So I say, you're right. Let him pay for 4 days. He said, no, he didn't destroy anything. He said, so he's not the answer. They asked him. So he told them the answer. I asked this in the mission. They didn't believe it. So he says, go and ask Shmuel, whether that time they had or the court. Go and ask Shmuel. Shmuel said, like he said, there is. Why do I sit in that room? That's so unusual. Have you ever heard that it happened? Person displays arrogance, displays that he thinks of himself that he's more important than he is, that he's put in jail. Have you ever heard of a story like this? it must have been that the standards, the surface standards, were very high at that time. And that the Jewish police has even controlled people, how are this place? Don't be arrogant, don't show yourself a greater person as you are. It's very interesting. But in any case, I learned a lesson that a person to go beyond the law is not totally bad thing, unless you're a great person. So if the Torah permits you to eat meat, I should eat meat, I should. Now, on the other hand, if somebody is an atheist, he shouldn't eat meat. He has no reason, there is nobody permitting. That's what I was saying. The universe is one big machine. So maybe during that period they were like Adam, not like Noah. Maybe. I don't know, but I'm starting thinking now. Starting thinking now how come on Shavuos there is a question in the Shavuos meal to have a milchik meal, you know? Daily. So people say because they were told that they couldn't eat unless they slaughtered, and they didn't have chalopim, didn't have the tools for slaughtering. But I'm starting to think it maybe much more than that. Maybe that they were raised to a level but they couldn't eat meat. Could be, I don't know. And as a symbol for it, we have a one meal a day behind Shavuos. Maybe. I never heard it. I'm just right now started thinking about it. So I don't guarantee, but it's. Pardon?
Despite everything you said, looking at it from another point of view, is not the human body designed to eat meat? If you look at human teeth, yeah?
Yes.
If you look at man's teeth, he has certain teeth which are used for tearing the flesh.
I'm not sure.
And if you look at I'm a vegetarian myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that there's a lot of things such as iron and a few other things that you get from meat and which you lack from vegetables, which your body doesn't eat.
You mean that
I'm saying
that vegetables have a deficiency, which meat is.
I'm not saying they have a deficiency. I'm saying that if you look at man's body, how it's structured. Certain teeth. We have teeth that has been developed for tearing meat.
I am not sure. Because those are theories. I'm not sure.
No, it's for tearing meat.
I don't know. Somebody will have to convince me, because there are so many theories which are being taught in schools, as would be, and just somebody had a fancy idea and it became. So therefore, I'm confused. I don't know.
when you say tearing, though, I mean, our teeth aren't sharp, you know, like a,
different sizes,
like a lion's teeth or anything. I mean, some of the vegetables are, you know, tight too, though, you have to eat. They're tough.
I agree with you, but you have to,
like an apple, I mean, you just, you know.
Yeah, but the guys who studied said the certain teeth that are geared especially for flesh. So I think they pull these sizes and what you're doing there.
Maybe it's
especially for tearing meat. It's geared, you know, if you look at the functions.
The ones right here.
That's right. These do, yeah.
But, I mean, when you say.
No, I'm saying, how would you.
Maybe it has other functions too. Tell me, is that the only
thing? It could
very well be, yeah. Tell me something else. What's that pencil doing now, man?
Big question.
Yeah.
Big question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm certain it has a function. But so far we haven't discovered it.
What did you say? Well, has a
appendix.
Well, these are.
One of the other rabbis brought that up tonight, and he said that it digests a certain thing that your body doesn't digest. There's one thing that it's made to digest that
we've discovered it already.
What about two kidneys?
Huh?
What about two kidneys? It appears we only need one kidney to live on.
What about two eyes?
No, it could be better with two eyes. I mean, your kidney is an organ that you can transplant from one person. The person you're going to make is one kidney.
No, but up till now, actually, we haven't discovered the means of transplanting an eye. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, that's probably the argument at all.
I'm saying, what's the use of two kidneys?
Yeah.
It must have a function, just like the appendix has.
When I was a kid, they asked me, why do you need two Yukumpurken, Cecilia?
Two?
Yukumpurken, you know, Shabbos morning, they say, after the they say, Yukumpurken, two. Only two. They said, one is a spare. So why do we have only one Mr. Berach? There are two components of one Mr. Berach. You know the answer? Huh? That's a spare. Now, two kidneys, maybe one is spare, I don't know. Because it's so important. But then you ask, why don't you have two hearts? Pardon?
Why doesn't one have two livers?
Right. And the answer is that it doesn't hurt us. No, it doesn't hurt us. If there is something I don't know, I know I can't. I'm not pushing myself to try to understand what I cannot understand. And learn what I can, I give myself an effort to understand.
There are various sects, you know,
mm-hmm.
with various different customs. Okay, so when I get into Orthodox Judaism a little more and more, I find various adversary feelings of one sect towards another. For, let's say, human reasons. You know, I mean, any group.
Yeah.
Any company cannot like another company, they might do something different, you know. So I can understand it on that level. But how does one deal with it from just a plain Jewish point of view? Like the adversary situation amongst Orthodox
Jews.
From the Jewish Yiddish point of view.
I think it's unfortunate. I think there are diversity is fine. There are more than one ways. There's more than one way to. And you have customs. Let's say, here you have a spider and a husky. Either one has justification, and maybe correct. As long as it's objective. When it becomes subjective, then it becomes a problem. And I read in Prophet, the Cheskel, Chapter 34. And the prophet is saying, now I address the shepherds of the people. Shouldn't the shepherd pasture the flock? Instead, he's pasturing himself. Now, we are human beings. When it comes to in leadership, there is Jewish leadership, there is human leadership, there is inhuman leadership. Jewish leadership is, Moshe says to Yeshua, I am appointing you the leader. Don't think I'm giving you leadership. I'm giving you service. You'll be a servant to the people. Now there is non-Jewish leadership, which is also fine. Let's say a politician is running for the White House. I am not sure whether it means only to give people a good leader. The White House is a nice apartment. And the Air Force One is also a convenient. But he is like a businessman. If somebody sells his shoes, he doesn't sell his shoes in order he shouldn't walk around barefoot. He sells the shoes because he has to make a living. And I buy the shoes because I need shoes, and we trade. I give him his livelihood, he gives him my shoes. A politician the same. An honest politician. He runs because he wants to be in the White House. But he trades with me. He says, I'll give you a good service, you give me the White House. Huh?
It's true.
It's true, right? Yeah. Now the non-honest, the inhuman leadership, as he is leading the people for himself, he's a bad leader. Huh? Now the Torah leadership cannot have company. There is no such thing as competition. And when Korach says to Moshe, why did you keep yourself high over the people? Korach has given himself up. That's not the Jewish leader. If you think he's in order to it's true that the leader has, in a family it's also the same. In a family it says, by law, that if the father is not alive, and the survivors have to, the estate, in the meantime, before the estate is divided, the eldest of the brothers is charged with running the business, running the estate. And he is entitled to buy more expensive clothing. Why? Because that's the deal. Because in order to present the business, he has to be better dressed. But it doesn't mean he is running the business in order to have a better dress. as a well dress in order to run the business. That usually is. But there may be your leadership. And it's fine. I am certain that Reagan is not running only for America. He runs for himself. But he promises, oh, I'll give you leadership. You give me the right house, I'll give you leadership. It's not the Jewish way of leadership, but it's fine. But in that leadership, there are all kinds of loopholes. Unfortunately, human beings are human beings. Great Talmid Chacham wouldn't happen. We don't have great scholarships in our generation. I remember when there was a generation of great Jewish leaders. Chofetz Chaim was a great Jewish leader. Chaim Eisel was a great Jewish leader. Just until the war. Here in Eretz Yisrael, there have also been a few great men. We lost them. The Chazon Ish was a great man. The Brisker Rav here in Yerushalayim was a great man. The Ponovitz Rav, the one who built the Ponovitz Yeshiva in Bnei Brak. Those have been people above the average, and there was nothing personal. There was no personal gain or personal promotion. It comes to smaller people. And what I find that the cleanest circles are in the yeshivas. In the yeshivas, all you can do is learn. And yeshivas, I feel much better. But it is unfortunate. The Dumna Magid, you heard of the Dumna Magid? There is a book, he spoke in parables. The Dumna Magid, he was, a Magid was a, what's a Magid?
Storyteller?
No. Magid, really the translation would be, a non-Jewish translation would be a preacher. But more than that, he used to say the Russians. But he, the Dumna, was famous. He lived at the time of the Vilna Goel. But he was famous. He explained everything with an illustration of his story. So he tells a story about a man who comes from and moves into a hotel and calls over a little boy and says, I left my luggage at the station, could you bring fetch it for me? He says, if it's heavy, I can't. So, no, he says, about 5 pounds. An hour later, the boy shows up and he's all exhausted. 5 pounds, 70 pounds. So the man says, Ingela, is it 70? Yeah, it's 70 pounds. He says, I have very good news for you. You brought, it's not my package, you better slap it back and bring the mic. He says, if you see anything about Torah, it's not pleasant, he says, it's the wrong package. But according to that, we have to go with what we have. But definitely. On the other hand, there are, I'll tell you another story. And I'm at the Sheva Brochas in America, in California, was the Sheva Brochas with Chabad. Chabad, you know Chabad. And so there was a conservative rabbi over there. He says, you're a Lithuanian Jew. What do you have to do with Chabad? I told him, listen, it says in Chumash that the Jewish people are an army, the army of the Hashem. An army. It all depends on what the formations could be. A navy could be marines, could be. Yeah. So if I'm not in the navy, I'm a marine. I'm in the Air Force. So I appreciate that he's in the navy. But I stick to my responsibility. He says, what are we? He said, who are you? He said, the conservatives. He says, you are the deserters of the army. Pardon?
Where are you from, California? Let me ask that.
Los Angeles.
I'm from, you are San Fernando?
San Fernando?
Northridge?
Sure.
From Northridge.
You are from Northridge?
Northridge, yeah.
I never was in Northridge, but I know there's a school in there.
There's
a school.
And I lived in Simi Valley for a while too, you know where it
is? Simi Valley, I know.
It's right, you know, where Ventura County starts.
Yeah.
And you go over the hills right there. I was asked a question, you were talking about Ronald Reagan. What do you think of Ronald Reagan? I don't know how long you've been here, but.
I'll tell you. It turns out that liberalism has caused a lot of trouble. The fact that he is a conservative gives him some leadership problems.
You mean like when you say that?
Even in California, made sense. He said, welfare, I'll give you work. It made sense.
Yeah, because I just, when you say liberalism, like you mean like when Carter, President like Carter, when he was in there?
Carter, I don't know what he was. Carter was liberal.
I don't know either.
No. Carter was a politician, a plain politician.
Yeah, because, you know, since I've got here, when I'm with friends, like in high school, Israeli friends, when we talk about that, I always get into asking them what they think about Ronald Reagan, you know, because I think he's good for this country.
Yeah, I know whether he's good for this country. It's very interesting. Nixon was the best for this country. First was Truman. And Truman also was not liberal. And Nixon was better than anybody else.
Well, you know, when I say good, I don't mean best. I mean good. I never really got into thought about politics
It's the idea of liberalism has confused the entire world. It has confused the entire world because we don't have limits. Human beings have no limits. Torah has limits. If you go to liberalism, it became, it became anarchism. If you exaggerate with freedom, there has to be controls of things. Let's say if we are two neighbors, and if I can do whatever I want in my apartment. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, I want to play the piano, and you couldn't sleep. My responsibility to my neighbor is that I limit my freedom in order not to step on your toes, right? But if you go to a limitless freedom, people have to step on each other. And that's what liberalism is doing, because it didn't. Now come the civil liberties union, which are Jews, and Jews are for liberalism. So they were fighting, young gay, yeah. they were fighting for a Nazi march in Skopje. Skopje is a...
There was a film about it.
And there was a film about it? Maybe I
am. In the United States?
East.
Huh?
In the United States? What state did you say?
Skokie, Skokie, Illinois.
Yeah, it was, you ever heard of 60 Minutes?
Huh?
You know 60 Minutes? It's like a news program. They talked about that, how they planned robberies and stuff to get the money to try and overthrow the
right. But who was fighting for them to legalize them, that they should go, was a liberty issue. Which means, if you don't have a limit,